football on off the ball.
Did you ever listen to that with the Spanish commentary? Ancara Messi, Ancara Messi,
oh,
Ancara Messi.
Goal, 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 goal.
It's such a good affirmation.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Football on off the ball.
With William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
Welcome along to Wednesday night's football show. We've got a packed studio for the next hour for you. We've got Nathan Murphy here in studio. Hello, Nathan. And we've got Will Clark in studio, Academy FAI / League of Ireland Academy Development Manager. Will, welcome back.
Boys.
Good to see you.
You too.
And Hans van der Elst, Double Pass and Senior Partner, Director of Football. How are you doing, Hans?
Good to Very good.
Good to have you in here.
Thank you very much.
So today we got the findings from an FAI Academy audit. Top line here, Will, what did we find out? What was the message you were getting out this afternoon?
Look, I think today was probably a little bit of a landmark moment for us, certainly in youth development in Ireland. For the first time ever, we've had an independent evaluation of our academies and our academy system. Again, obviously, looking back on the past, we probably all would have had a fair idea, but a lot of our opinions would have been, subjective as opposed to being objective. So again, it was great to work with the guys in Double Pass over the last, 4 months to complete the report.
Hans, when you're brought in, how much did you know about the academy setup and how much investment was actually needed? And I guess, what have you discovered over the course of this audit?
Mm-hmm. We are doing this in a lot of countries and have been doing this in a lot of countries. So for us, we have our framework, we have our schedule, our modus operandi. So on that one, it was not a surprise to come here and to do this. Only the term, the note, it was a little bit on a short notice. Yeah. Normally we do this in 6 months or 1 year, and now it had to be done in 3 months. So that was a challenge. What we discovered is that as Irish football and talent development systems, academies, there is a big, big gap with a lot of countries, but there is a lot of willingness, there is a lot of enthusiasm, there is a lot of openness, there is a lot of very good people who are there, who wants to improve, but still a long way to go.
Well, every February, March, you stand up in front of the media and you paint a pretty stark picture of where we are in terms of academy development and underage football and the impact that that's having on our senior international teams. Considering you know where we are and that we are comparable with a lot of the minnows of European football in terms of the resources that we're putting into academy football, why did we need what is a 144-page audit to just reinforce what you already know?
Certainly from our point of view, it's the one thing we've always said, we certainly don't know everything. So again, there was lots of key learnings for us in the report. So again, from our point of view, it was really valuable in that regard. But I suppose, if you look back to last September, we submitted a League of Ireland Academy investment proposal to government. And again, as I say, we put forward a case for investment into the academies and the academy sector. We obviously received feedback from the government and from the department in relation to the validation of that proposal, if you like. So ultimately, the government and the department basically wanted to validate, first of all, the need. So is there a need for investment into the sector? And then secondly, validate the request in terms of the ask.
Hans, is there a need for investment into the sector?
One of our main values is sincerity. So we always try to be as straightforward and sincere as possible. Irish football and the talent development needs a kickstart. It should be on a longer term self-sustainable, like in a lot of other countries. But at this moment, there should be something that's starting, that putting in motion and that putting all the processes in motion. So yes, 100%. There is a momentum now. Because, as you know, all other countries are developing and developing. On the other hand, you have the Brexit, as you know, and a very, very difficult period also in developing talent and the importance of doing it here in Ireland. So the combination of these is, it's not up to us to say, but maybe it's an hour or never. It's the moment to do something, to have a kickstart, 100%.
You talk about a academy setup being self-sustainable. How do you arrive at that? How does a country get to that point?
Yep. Again, that's something that's happening in that has been happening in a lot of countries. First of all, to invest into developing better players, to bring them into first team environment, to sell them in the country across the water to Europe for higher fees, higher numbers, and to reinvest that in the system. And then it gets turning. But the problem at this moment is that the players are not in the best way developed at this moment, that the conditions are not good enough, that there is not professional staff and stuff on the one hand, that the transition into the first team is not working in and not going in a very good way. So it's very difficult at this moment to generate money, to create value, to reinvest. The moment that you are there to reinvest, then it can get self-sustainable. That's what we mean.
Is there a sense, Will, that recent stories regarding young Irish talents such as Victor Ojinvunner or Mason Melia will actually make your case easier to make to government, given the self-sustainable nature that might provide?
Yeah. Look, there's just two things on that. So again, it's obviously fantastic for obviously those players to get the opportunities and again, the valuation that's being put on them. But that's almost like a proof of concept. Yeah. So again, it's, you know, because when we met our colleagues, you know, in government and in the department, you know, we basically went to them with an investment proposal. It's not like a handout that we're looking for. So again, it's almost like a kickstart investment because again, we believe that we can develop more players like Victor and like Mason and so on. Again, as Han said there, to generate the money needed to basically reinvest back into the system and again to, you know, I suppose, you know, step away from the need to get support from external stakeholders.
Can you remind us of the numbers? So what you're looking for, say, in this upcoming budget in October, and what you're going to be looking for in the years that come after?
Yeah, well, just on that. So again, you know, the one thing, we went into the process with a really open mind. So again, we were basically tasked with, you know, sourcing, you know, double pass, or obviously we went to tender in relation to, you know, who would win the contract. Again, having gone through a fairly, fairly onerous procurement process, double pass won the contract, which was great given the fact that they've worked in 131 countries around the world. So again, there's a lot of expertise, a lot of experience. I suppose the bandwidth of the benchmark, you know, was obviously really helpful from our point of view. So again, you know, we're able to lean into double pass's experience in terms of how we compare to other countries at all different levels. So not necessarily, you know, the top sort of 5, 6, 7, 8 countries in the world, but literally from, you know, the very best countries down to some lower ranking countries. So as the process basically, you know, evolved, I think it's probably fair to say that our thinking has evolved as well, Nathan, in the sense that it's more important now that, you know, that we do this right as opposed to doing it quickly. So, you know, it's really important from our perspective that there's probably, you know, we probably need some time to build capacity within clubs. Because if we were to get, you know, the full amount or the full ask last year, you know, it's probably arguable whether or not the system can actually absorb that amount of money in a short period of time. So whilst the level of ambition remains the same, we will probably take a different approach in terms of, say, like phasing in, funding or support, certainly in terms of the ask over the next 2 or 3 years.
Why can't it absorb the amount of money that you would like? Is that just a facilities thing?
Yeah, so it basically goes back to everything. So again, probably a lack of physical infrastructure, a lack of, you know, like even in terms of, say, workforce development. So as Hans alluded to there, we've got some brilliant people involved in the League of Ireland Academy system, some really brilliant coaches. But unfortunately, you know, there's lots of other strategic areas and other strategic roles within an academy and within the club that we need to sort of fulfill. So from our point of view, it's really important that, you know, we get the foundations right and then we basically build upon that over the next year or two. So, sorry, Hans, yeah? It's a case of basically putting the foundations in place and then basically building on that over the next 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm.
Maybe to add on that one, because in the report, okay, there are all the findings, there are benchmarks, but there are also clear recommendations. So on each level, there are global recommendations, but then on each dimension that we have audited, on a strategy, on organization, football philosophy, all these different dimensions, there are clear findings, recommendations, globally in this report, and then afterwards, each club receives the same for themselves, for the club. So every club gets a detailed report with findings. findings, recommendations, where they can build on their strategy, or they can use it to convince people inside the club, to convince the president, owner, CEO, I don't know, to try to put things in place. So it should be an inspiration instead of only an audit, and this is the result, and you failed or you were good in it. And it's the and that's what we are meaning with getting kickstarted, getting started in this process, because it's also the momentum what we talked about, but also a mind shift. It's a mind shift for a lot of people inside the system. When we look how clubs are at this moment manager driven, managers are deciding a lot of first team, but also of the academy teams. It's very important that everybody is aware of the importance of investing in talent development and bringing youngest, playing them as young as possible, getting them ready. So that's a thing that we are not gurus, but together we want to try to bring these messages.
That I can imagine, Hans, is a difficult message to get through to everybody. Say in a league, it's not just an Irish thing. It's something I'm sure you've encountered in plenty of other countries where first team managers want to win games now. How do you persuade them that the future matters just as much?
We are working in a lot of clubs, and recently we were working in a club in Denmark, and they said, "Yeah, but you cannot bring young players because we want to win." We said, "Sorry, we don't understand. What are you saying? Yeah, you cannot win with young players." "Yes, of course you can. Look to, and of course you are not Barcelona and Paris Saint-Germain or Genk or Hajduk Split or Ajax or I don't know, but you have to bring 4 players or 5 players within the team and surround them by experienced 5-6 other players. And then there is no problem at all to combine and result and develop players and creating value. But that you can only win with older players, I'm very sorry. I look into the data, look into all competitions. That's not the case. That's not the truth. So,
and just on that, again, one of the recommendations within the report is basically the need for sporting directors in clubs. Because again, naturally, and to be fair to first team managers, they're obviously only concerned about the here and now, understandably, because you know, you lose 3 or 4 games and you might find yourself out of work. So it's natural that they only consider the short term. From an academy point of view, obviously, you know, we would tend to look at the long term. But in terms of sort of somebody who's responsible for, you know, overseeing the strategic development of a club, that's probably where a sporting director would come in. And again, that's one of the key recommendations in the report.
And Hans, when you've gone around and you've spoken to first team managers, is there that alignment all the way through the club from first team manager down?
To be honest, we haven't spoken yet with first team managers. Okay. So we have been in the club, in academy environment and all that. But what we have seen in almost all the clubs, that there is, first of all, no alignment, on one hand, but also not much communication. So, and that's the thing that we were pinpointing, to install a technical board. It's a common thing to install a technical committee where football decisions are made within a club and where there is representation of the academy. And then you can align all these things. But this is crucial, because we cannot expect to transition young players into the first team when there is no communication between academy and first team. How will it happen? So that's one of the things that we have to, together with all the people, educate and to try to, how can I say, enforce it, that it's the importance of it.
And I think one of the things, Nathan, just on that, like, you know, again, we need to sort of move away from accidental opportunities for young players. So again, if you look at a lot of the younger players who have basically, you know, who are doing really well in the league at the moment and obviously progressing, you know, if you look at how they basically transitioned into the first team, in many cases, it was probably an accidental opportunity. So the centre forward is injured or somebody suspended, we'll call upon an academy player, and then they go in and they get an opportunity and do well. So again, from our point of view, it's probably important going forward now with clubs, like to work with clubs to make sure that we, you know, that the transition of players from academy into first team football is done in a more measured, strategic way.
How many academies do we have?
26.
Is that too many, Hans?
We were discussing this one. No, we don't think so, because there is a lot of potential, there is a lot of player potential, but the pathways have to be built so that you have the pyramid, you have the ecosystem, the base is there with all the grassroots, but then you have to develop all these academies to give the opportunity for players to develop themselves. And then there is a difference between development of elite players and development of grassroots players, meaning that it's a different environment. And it's not wrong or right, but it's a different focus. So to have at the top of the pyramid pathways for elite players is also crucial.
The reason I ask is because if you do get the full government funding, and then that has to be divided up, 26 ways. And even go back to Owen's question about Shamrock Rovers are going to receive a huge income stream from Victor Osimhen. There's one argument that, well, actually, they're already self-sustaining. And I was out at Rhodestone, their training facility, this morning, and they have an indoor pitch, and they have a link up with a local school, and there's transition year students, and there's an indoor gym, and they've outdoor training pitches for all levels, that maybe Shamrock Rovers are already at the level they need to be. They don't need the investment, and that when you look at a recent Ireland under 15 team, there's no players from Munster, there's no players from Ulster, that Finn Harps and Sligo Rovers and Cork City and Kerry, they need a massive investment, but actually maybe they're not set up, and maybe there's not the numbers there to justify it.
Yeah, well, I think just in relation to that, like, again, when you look at the benchmark and you look at how we compare to countries ranked 51 to 100 in the world, unfortunately, we probably don't have any clubs that would be comparable, if you like, in that regard. So, for example...
So if we're looking at other countries 51 to 100, we wouldn't have academies that are comparable even to that level.
Well, again, if you look at, say, the report, so there's 29 key benchmarks, say, on the boys' side of things. There's obviously separate benchmarks in relation to the girls, but in relation to the boys' side, we're behind in 22 of the 29 key benchmarks compared to other countries ranked 51 to 100 in the world. So we're not even talking about, countries ranked in the top 50. So again, the data will basically suggest, you know, that the direction of travel here is that, you know, we're going to basically regress in the coming years, particularly post-Brexit, unless we basically address some of the fundamental issues that we face now. So, and whilst, by the way, and again, be very, very strong in this, not just League of Ireland clubs, but football in general and people involved in football in general in this country are, like, absolutely outperforming their resources. You know, it's a minor miracle that we still continue to develop, you know, players of a really good standard. Our job is, how can we help clubs develop more players of a high quality standard?
Because, Will, what you were saying is also that there is, being academy coach at the moment is not a profession. You have to go across the water or something, and there is a talent drain. You cannot be professional in this only as an academy director. So when you are talking about Shamrock Rovers or other top teams, they don't have professional coaches. Yeah, when you compare with all these other countries, it's normal to have professional people. We are not talking about 20 or 30, but 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 professional staff to develop players. It's normal. So,
and even if we look at one of the key benchmarks, so again, at the moment, I think it's 46% of clubs basically have a full-time academy manager in the country at the moment, compared to maybe, you know, I think it's 66% again of countries ranked 51 to 100, you know, so that comparison. When we look at the number of clubs that have a full-time head of coaching, there's only one. So Shamrock Rovers are the only club in the country that have a full-time head of coaching. So that's 4%, again, compared to, I think it's almost 50%, again, comparable to those countries. And then from our perspective, in terms of the number of clubs that have a minimum 4 full-time academy coaches, we don't have any clubs in this country that have 4 academy coaches whose, you know, job it is to coach those teams on a full-time basis, compared to 36%. So even if we look at the range of countries we're comparing ourselves to, you know, we're falling behind in 22 of those 29 key benchmarks.
Looking at some of them then, and you've outlined and started outlining, so League of Ireland academies have a narrower player base than international benchmarks. So most teams have one team at each age level. That would be lower than international standards?
Yeah, it's lower because it's there are not so many pre-academies on the boys' side, also on the girls' side. The League of Ireland teams of the girls' side are only starting at under 17, so meaning they're coming in at that level at 16 years old. So it's to get the pathways going that from 10, 11 years old, they can train the best with the best, play the best against the best, then you can create a higher level. That's on the one hand, so not enough playing opportunity, let's say. On the other hand, there's also the contact time, that when you compare again with these benchmarks, most of the teams are training 2 times a week, maybe 3 times a week. When you compare this with other countries, it's 5, 6, 7 times a week, two times a day that players are training. So the contact time is too limited. And when you combine all these things together, you get the end result that it's a little bit of luck when players are coming through. And it's not like a talent factory and a machine that is producing.
So again, I think in relation to that specific benchmark, you know, it's obviously highlighted, I suppose, structural gaps in the player pathway. You know, particularly say in the girls' side, the fact that we only started under 17. playing. You know, even on the boys' side, the fact that we jumped from under 15 to under 17, so there's no under 16. So, and again, Nathan, if you look at the the system as it currently stands, you know, there's a bias towards early developers, if you like. You know, so again, if you look at the types of players who are coming through, generally speaking, you know, they tend to be those early developers. You know, the Evan Fergusons, the Mason Melias, the Michael Noonans. So again, they're physically well developed. Which is fantastic, and it's great because they're all really, really good players. But on the flip side, you know, we need to make sure from a talent ID point of view that, you know, that we don't miss out on basically maybe some late maturing players. And the system at the moment, it doesn't accommodate for those players.
We are from Belgium. You know, Belgium was, it's unbelievable, for 5 years, number one in the world. Never won anything, but still, apologies for that one. But one of the main successes of Belgian football was a big attention on late mature player, relative age effect, on the futures. Because at one time in 2018, when we were playing semi-final, I think 7 of the 11 starters were coming from future teams. So meaning not the first national teams, but the national teams with the late mature players, etc. So to have an eye and to give possibility to these players, because you, the same as Belgium, we cannot spoil a talent. We need to have every talent within the system. And that's why these things are really important.
And that's a question I had for you with regards to contact times. So those future players that you talk about, they would also have received the 5 days a week,
exactly.
Twice a day,
exactly.
Just like the elite of the elite.
Exactly. And also the playing time at best level and not sitting on the bench and playing the last 5 minutes or that you get them out of the system. No. They should be able to play as much as the other players. Because at the end, okay, they will go further than the early mature players.
A very basic question, but how do you counterbalance that with normal life of a child in Belgium if they are dedicating 10 sessions, whatever, that's going to be 10 to 20 hours of their week to football. I can understand that if, you know, you are adjacent to the level of an up-and-coming talent in the Premier League and you're like, this guy is going to become a professional footballer. But for those without the guarantee, how do you countenance those things?
That's another thing, the combination of football and school. To align it in the best way possible. In Belgium, at one time, there was an organization of top sports schools, so that in the morning, players could play there, then school, and then in the evening to the club again. Now it's more taken over by the clubs, because the clubs are so professional that they can align everything and guide everything, that they can combine and education and football together. And for top talents and for the top environments also here, that's also the future, to see in the best way possible to align this.
Is that where we want to get to?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, again, I think from our point of view, if we're to measure the success of the academy system moving forward, so it's not just going to be about, you know, the number of players that break through and play professional football in the League of Ireland or, you know, or abroad or playing for Ireland at senior international level across the men's or women's. You know, it's really important from our point of view that, you know, that football and education basically go hand in hand. You know, again, it's really important from our perspective that every kid that basically enters into a club in the system, that they enjoy the experience first and foremost, because again, it's only ever going to be a small percentage of players that go on and make it as a professional player. So, you know, we want them, as I say, fundamentally to enjoy the experience in the system, but then also to pick up, like, you know, sort of, I suppose, you know, focus in on their holistic development as well. So whether it's life skills, you know, whether it's their education, different experiences, maybe traveling abroad, things like that. So we want to basically try and develop a really holistic model that basically suits the needs of all players. And ultimately, we need to create a system that works for the player and not have players that need to, you know, work within a system, if that makes sense. So the system needs to be flexible, not the player.
The number one message we always get in when we have this conversation comparing Ireland to other countries is other countries aren't dealing with the GAA and with rugby as a rival. And I know in Belgium that, you know, you've lots of sports stars and other sports. I don't know if you got to assess the impact of that in player development for just soccer in Ireland.
Yeah. No. It was something that we mentioned. That was mentioned every time when we came into environments where Gaelic football was very big, and then the competition in that one. So no, it's a really specific one for Ireland. It's not something that's happening in other countries, let's say.
And again, from our point of view, you know, it's important that all kids play all sports. To be honest, you know, so it's you know, like ultimately, you know, if a kid is playing, whether it's rugby or GAA or hurling or whatever it might be, you know, and they're obviously playing football as well, you know, it's a, it does have an indirect benefit to, you know, their development as a footballer, if you like, because again, you know, they're different skills, you know, they're training. So again, we would encourage all kids to play different sports. Of course, if you're shown some potential at some point, you know, you might have to make a decision. But, you know, from our point of view, it's really important that kids get exposure to all the different sports. And again, ultimately, from football's perspective, you know, we believe that football is the best game in the world. You know, and it's up to football to put its best foot forward to make sure that, you know, when kids play football, that they love playing football, that they enjoy it and they want to stay within the game. So, but we're certainly not, you know, we're certainly not against, like, we would be very much in favour of multi-sports and kids trying different things.
Hans, you mentioned Belgium and the success story there, mm-hmm. and we've often looked at Belgium through the years and small-sided games, and we've looked enviously at a country like Croatia and the success mm-hmm. that they've managed. If you were to take, say, Shamrock Rovers or Pats or Bows, who are identified in this as sort of the three leading academies, where would they fit into the Belgian level? What tier would they be at if you were to look at where they are in Belgium?
Mm-hmm. It's maybe a difficult question to benchmark it like that one. When we look into the professionalism, the amount of full-time coaches, into the infrastructure and all that, it will be in Belgium, maybe in tier 3 or something like this at this moment, the top clubs, because tier 2 is way more professional, tier 1 for sure is way more professional.
And where are we looking to get to? Because I think sometimes we forget that in this conversation, that we think academy and we think Manchester City Academy or Liverpool Academy, no. And can we churn players off? Like, if we get this government investment, yeah. in 10 years' time, what level of academy yeah. can we expect to have in the country?
I can give, we were discussing it before, I can give, and it was mentioned in the past, the example of Denmark. We started in Denmark to work 10 years ago. And 10 years ago, it was similar with the situation here. No professionalism in academy football. Infrastructure lacking, no pathways, a lot of things not in place. By a clear strategic plan by the league and the federation, an investment of the government, there was audit, quality assurance, education, club implementation, all these things we were partnering up, were putting in place. At the end, the results were that the Danish national team went from 25 until 9th in the FIFA ranking. In the UEFA ranking of the clubs, they increased like this. The transfer revenue they were selling before for 1.5 million, 2 million, now 15 million FC Copenhagen is selling. The average age in the league went from 25.5 to 23. So a lot of indicators of the impact of that. And that's an impact for everybody. And for the national teams, and for the clubs, and for the league, and for the government with all the money that's coming back in.
Did in Denmark, did that come from government support?
This was initiated by a kickstart, like we were saying. And then, again, it should be self-sustainable. In Belgium, it's the same. It's the government in Flanders who is investing every year in quality assurance. So all the clubs are audited every 3 years to always push and increase the level. So, yeah.
And sorry, Nathan, just one thing there, just going back slightly, just in relation to the question to Hans, in relation to where, say, Eric, like Academy is currently maybe a benchmark against, you know, I think the really important thing to say at this moment of time is that when we look at, say, the physical infrastructure and we look at, say, the full-time staff and the contact time, that's where we would benchmark. But I think it's also important to say that that isn't necessarily the same, like, is true of the quality of player as well, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So there still are lots of really, really quality players. And unfortunately, you know, those kids aren't getting the necessary support and help that they need to maximise the potential. So whilst the system and maybe the infrastructure and everything around it is at a certain level, that's not true of the players as well. And unfortunately, and again, this is where it sort of ties into player development and, say, the quality of opportunity as players progress. Again, very often, just going back to a previous role that I had in Joey's and Bray, so probably would have been involved in 30 to 40, I suppose, contract negotiations with, you know, UK clubs in particular. And the one thing that I learned over the years is that, you know, when foreign clubs are looking to come and you know, negotiate in relation to players here in terms of training compensation, they very often put a valuation on the development environment and not the potential of the player, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So they look, for example, okay, well, we have a really good player here, but he's, you know, he's maybe only training 2 or 3 nights a week. He's training in sort of grassroots type facilities with a volunteer coach. So they're putting the valuation on that as opposed to the actual potential of the player. So again, I would have been back and forth in, you know, England in particular, and you go over and you look at an Irish player and, you know, your eye will tell you that, you know, that he is probably every bit as good as the European player, but they're not getting the opportunities. Mm-hmm. Because maybe, you know, the English club has maybe paid, you know, 30, 40, 50 grand for the Irish player, but they may have paid $500,000 for the European player. So people in that environment have a vested interest to make sure that the player that they've actually spent more money on gets a higher quality of opportunity. So again, that actually directly sort of impacts in terms of, you know, the number of players that say in the past would have gone away at a young age and how their careers panned out in that, you know. So,
and impacts their wages when they go over as well.
Exactly.
When we look at a Mason Mealy or Victor Osimhuna, that even if they weren't to make it, at least they're going to be properly paid while they're in England for 4 or 5 years as compared to
absolutely
the guys who are going over for nothing.
So they're going over with a value. And again, when we look at, you know, so very often if you look at the league in the last few years and you look at some, you know, players and agents looking to insert, you know, like activation amounts, you know, release clauses, really what they're doing is they're putting a ceiling on the value of the player. And the only people who are really losing out in that regard is the player, because, you know, there's a valuation on it. So if the valuation is 50 grand or 60 grand or 70 grand, when the player actually moves across, that's how they will be treated. You know, it's a bit of a punt, you know, we'll take a punt on this player, whatever. Mm-hmm. Whereas again, if players are going for, you know, reasonably, you know, substantial sums of money, well, then they will be viewed differently and the quality of their opportunity will be completely different.
On the thing that you were saying, of course there is enough quality. Eh? There is a lot of potential, there is a lot of talent. It's just the circumstances and the surroundings are not in place yet. What you're saying on building value, yeah, it's also because yeah, it's Irish talent is very cheap. It's very easy to get them. You get them very cheap, but you have to build it up. You have to build a system up that they know, okay, everybody knows in Ireland there is something going on. There is some talent popping up. It's well developed, and then the value will increase, and they know they don't. Nobody can come just here and get somebody for peanuts. No, it will be other amounts that you are talking about.
So. And again, that's why it's brilliant. From again, you look at Shamrock Rovers, you look at St. Pat's, they've run really good deals over the last few years. So again, that's setting the benchmark in terms of valuation for Irish players, you know. So it's
is that going to count against them when the government money is dished out?
No, because again, any of the conversations that we've had, you know, it's almost like proof of concept, if you like.
Okay.
So this isn't like we haven't gone to any stakeholder, government included, looking for money, you know, forevermore, if you like. So as Hans alluded to earlier on, basically, you know, it would be fantastic if we received effectively a kickstart, you know, to allow us to put in the necessary provisions in terms of, you know, the full-time staff to increase the you know, the development time, to give the players obviously a better developmental experience, again, to create the value. So if and when those players are moving for higher sums of money, that the money is ring-fenced and it's reinvested back in.
But it's not just, in our experience, it's not just as a government or no matter who, just to throw money to the clubs and say, here, it will not work, and maybe some clubs want this, but it will not work. When you do it in a guided way with quality assurance behind it, and you measure things and you monitor things and you set processes in place, and they know where to invest in the different areas to have results at the time, then you will get results.
Can you talk a bit about that then? Because that, I'm sure, for a lot of people listening, and when you're having the conversations with government, is we're handing over, and we might get into the FAI's reputation, yeah, but if they're handing over this money, and there's a long list in this of priorities in terms of improving facilities,
yeah,
staffing levels, what is the oversight going to be? Where is the money going to go?
So again, I think it's really important to, you know, to clarify a few things. First of all, it's not the government's fault that football finds itself in the position that we're in, to be honest. You know, so I think that's really important to say. Unfortunately, given the financial situation within the FAI, however, we can't obviously support the clubs to the level that, you know, we would like to. So from our point of view, and particularly in my role, whatever, we're looking at all the different stakeholders. So whether it's FIFA, UEFA, government, you know, so we're basically seeking support from those stakeholders to try and obviously give us that kickstart that we need. So, but it is important to say that. I think secondly, as the process has continued, so again, we would have developed a really strong relationship with our colleagues in Sport Ireland over the last 3 or 4 months. So again, in particular, Paul McDermott and Nora Stapledon. really, really experienced people working across a lot of different sports. So again, the guidance and the advice that they gave us throughout the process has been invaluable. Again, when we look at, you know, the department, so ultimately we've been tasked with this piece of work first and foremost. So, you know, and we completely appreciate, like, this wouldn't have, you know, we wouldn't be sitting here today, like, were it not for the government and were it not for Minister O'Donovan and Minister McConnellogue, because without that support to actually get this audit up and running, to put us in a position, you know, we're not even in the starting blocks, if you like, you know, but without that support so far from all those stakeholders, we wouldn't be here. Having said all that, just looking forward, like, it's really important, as much as we're talking about, you know, sort of building capacity within clubs and developing the workforce, you know, we're also trying to build trust and confidence in all the stakeholders. So be it that the football community, be it the government, be it the public. So that's part of this process as well.
When it comes to actually persuading the government to invest the required money, how much work still needs to be done on that front?
Yeah, lots of work, to be honest. And again, from our point of view, there are definitely no guarantees. The one thing, I think, if you look at Irish football over, you know, many decades, we've always taken a short-term approach to it. I think we're at a moment in time now whereby we're looking to take a more long-term approach. And as I said earlier on, it's more important that we do it correctly rather than we do it quickly. So again, as I say, you know, we're trying to build the confidence of the department and of the ministers and of the government. So I'd like to think that, obviously, working with our colleagues in Double Pass, that we've produced a really comprehensive report, you know, to give us the recommendations and the findings. So again, you know, we need some time to basically digest the contents and basically to come up with a plan, if you like, mm-hmm. to go back to the department and then move it forward.
What's very important in that one is that it can be monitored. We have a full dashboard with the audit results, but also with the talent development index, which teams are doing really well at this moment in transitioning players into the first team, with dashboards on measuring practice. How is the coaching style within the club specifically? What is the style of play that we analyzed?
So is that a ranking sort of 1 to 26?
Yeah, yeah, but that's something that we did.
Where the money goes?
No, not in the first instance.
No. But we have measured this, because what we see a lot is that maybe some teams are very good in theory on paper, but not into practice or inverse. So we measured everything, and that can be monitored over a longer time, so that you can, what I want to say is that you can see, as a government, as a league, when you invest into clubs, you can also monitor and follow up the results. And it's not just to throw money and to see, okay, inshallah, maybe hopefully we will get some results. No, you can really follow it up, and that's the difference.
And again, from our point of view, look, we realise, you know, particularly when you're talking about public money, you know, when you're spending public money, there's an extra responsibility with that. There needs to be a return on that money. And probably most importantly, there needs to be accountability and transparency and all those things, quality assurance. So again, the one thing when we met the department last week and Sport Ireland, you know, we obviously, you know, we're chatting away in terms of, you know, the next stages and things like that. But it's crucially important going forward that we pinpoint the four or five key areas that we believe that we can actually make an impact on, you know, in the sort of short term, if you like. Mm. You know, but more importantly than that, it's like, how do we measure the progress and success of those particular, you know, recommendations or action points? So again, as I say, it's just, you know, it's almost like a continuous process of building confidence and building trust.
That's been a long process already. Like, it felt 12 months ago as if we were in a position where all of this was done, and suddenly there's an audit needed. And, you know, I think you,
well, in fairness to the government,
comfortable with doing the audit and putting that in position. But, like, it's hard to underestimate how big the next 6 to 8 weeks are for the FAI in terms of, well, obviously, senior international team. But if you're in government, are you getting the sense that the trust is there? Because they're looking at an FAI where, you know, the football pathways plan, the aligned calendar, the board are going to implement it. Then they change their mind. They're not going to implement it. We obviously have today, there's a redundancy program, unfortunately, coming in at the FAI. They're going in front of an Oireachtas committee in a month's time, where, as we've seen from Oireachtas committees, it can end up as a bit of a kicking, whether it's warranted or not. And that's going to be 10 days before they make the decision.
Yeah, of course. And look, from our point of view, this isn't, and again, with respect, this isn't about the next 6 to 8 weeks, if you like. You know, this is again, this is about the next few years. You know, it's about the next 6 to 8 months. It's about the next sort of 18 to 24 months. So again, as I say, and I keep repeating, it's more important that we take our time to do it properly as opposed to do it quickly. So, you know, again, we'll obviously sit down with the department. We'll put forward maybe a plan or a suggested plan and get the feedback. And again, we might obviously, you know, tailor that, you know, based on the feedback. And ultimately, we'll put our best foot forward. But as I say, it's really important now at this point that, you know, that we take the feedback on board and that we work with all the stakeholders, because whatever happens in the next 2 or 3 months won't make or break us. It'll just be, you know, if we get, you know, disappointing news, well, then we'll just keep going again. So, like, this isn't something that, you know, we're here for the short term. You know, we're going to basically work with everybody in the game. So if it takes us 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years to get where we need to be, well, then that's what we'll do. So again, perseverance is going to be really important in this.
What can be guaranteed, that's what we can say, but okay, we are a commercial company. What we have been doing is when you install these things within a system, results will come 100% clear. And all the proofs are there. So it's not a luck or maybe or playing darts and, oh no, it's 100% guaranteed. Mm-hmm. When you put these processes in place, you will have outcome, 100%. But yeah.
Hans, just last one for me anyway. We're fond of a comparison in a negative sense, and it's certainly been made in this conversation, in an optimistic sense. Where can Ireland shoot for relative to other countries? Which level of European country, for example, can Ireland have the ambition to be on the level of?
Mm-hmm. And on that one, and so there are findings, and there are really, they can be interpreted rather harsh, or it's not so easy. We see a lot of good things, but we see also a lot of things that has to be improved. And those are the recommendations. So there can be a plan. There is a plan to be developed. So there is a light at the end of the tunnel. There are solutions. When you look now to your situation with the clubs on UEFA ranking, a league like Ireland should be in top 25. You are 30, 32, I think. Mm-hmm. But it should be that you are aiming for not 10 or 15, but 20, between 20 and 25. That should be the goal. When you look to the FIFA ranking, yeah, you should be aiming for 30, 35, something like this, presume. And this can only, there is only one solution to do this, is by talent development. There are no other solutions. That's the only thing. By investing in talent development and setting these things, this is the only way, because it will not happen anymore from players abroad or I don't know or what. So,
well, you made a really good point on that, Will. I think when we spoke, where I think people have this impression because of Brexit that we're going to be in a scenario where every player who represents the international team is going to come through League of Ireland academies, whereas maybe the reality is that the vast majority of the senior international team is going to come from players, second generation players in England and abroad, because they're going to have a far better chance than anyone who's born here.
Look, absolutely. And again, if you look at, say, the senior international team, both men's and women's, you know, we're getting to a stage whereby, you know, I suppose the impact of Brexit, particularly on the men's side, it actually hasn't reached the senior international team yet, if you like, you know. So again, when you look at the 2004 group, which was the first group who didn't go to the UK, for example, or, you know, that could go at 16, they're only sort of coming up through the under-21 system at the moment and that, you know. So again, look, it's really important. Like, we're always, like, Ireland will always have good footballers. You know, this is, it's not a case of, you know, really, this is about how can we help develop, you know, a larger quantity of top quality players, because at the moment, you know, it's you know, there are far too few players coming through the system, and that's obviously naturally going to, you know, impact on the future success of the international teams. But to your point, it's probably true. If you look at the evolution of squads over the next 2 or 3 years, there probably will be more, Irish players who are maybe not born in Ireland representing the country.
Folks, thanks a million for enlightening us on all of that. Some really, really interesting findings. You've been listening to Hans van der Elst of Double Pass, Senior Partner Director of Football there, who's been conducting the audit, and of course, Will Clark Academy, FAI League of Ireland Development Manager. Folks, thanks a million for popping in.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Thanks very much.
Football on Off the Ball
with William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.